LiveWire Network with Ling Pang.
Hello, I'm Ling Pang. Welcome to LiveWire Network. Today, we are very pleased to welcome author and publisher Graham Slater. And we are talking about ABBA, the Swedish music sensations who have sold an estimated 150 million to 400 million records worldwide. Hello, Graham. How are you?
Hi, Ling. Hi, Ling. Nice to be with you. And the name of the game actually is a fantastic start, a piece of music for this interview, because it is the name of the game. It's very, very interesting, the ABBA story.
Is this track written by the singers themselves?
Yeah, I mean, well, Benny and Bjorn are the main writers in the band, but they also worked with, and I know we'll probably talk about it later, but their manager, Stig and Anderson, he actually co-wrote a lot of their big hits. He had been very successful back in the 80s. He had a hit in Holland, which got him off the ground, really. And he knew the secret of writing. And for people who don't have English as the first language, they write songs very differently, which is a bonus. And that's why ABBA's music is so different to us. Well, when Stig put them all together, he wanted a name, and he ran an advert in the Gothenburg newspaper looking for a name for the band, and he came up with two. He came up with Baba,
yeah,
and he came up with Alibaba. And
Alibaba
wouldn't work. I mean, in this day and age, it certainly wouldn't. And then he decided then that the name would be ABBA.
Yeah.
So that's how the name arrived.
So I believe you met Benny and Bjorn when you tour in Sweden. How exciting is that? And when was it that happened?
It was 1967, and we were on tour in Sweden for 6 weeks, and we were backing a duo called the Caravels, two girl singers who had one hit record. And the system was that we played in the folk parks, which are open air arenas all over Sweden with two or three stages. So there were always two or three bands. So Benny's band, the Hep Stars, and Bjorn's band were always playing there. And I took my piano accordion with me. And we arrived at one park, folk park, and Benny was there and he was playing his accordion. So I got mine out of the van. And we started playing together for a couple of hours, just playing music that he knew, English songs and traditional Swedish songs.
Was that before the Eurovision song Waterloo success?
7 years before. Right. But each of the members of the band were all successful in their own right. So mm-hmm. Benny was in a band. Bjorn had a band. Mm-hmm. Agneta, when she was 15, joined a big band. Mm-hmm. And she started writing songs. She's a very successful songwriter. And then Annifried or Frida also had it. So all four artists had hit records, and they were very, very well known in Scandinavia. And on Agneta's 20th birthday, each of them had been, they all knew each other, and they'd been invited to go to Famagusta in Cyprus to represent Sweden, to put together a promotion for Swedish people to go to Cyprus for their holidays. Mm-hmm. And Benny and Annifried and Agneta at the back, their photo of them was used on the travel magazine to encourage people to go to Cyprus. And they each performed individually. But on the last night, the promoter said, why don't you all go up on stage and sing one song together? And they did. And they decided, whilst they were traveling back to Sweden, to form a new group called the Festfolk, which is the party people. And they started touring Sweden together. So they were all together then from 1970.
The music, it's just so inspiring. They were dominating Top of the Pops as well at that time. So many number one songs happened after that period as well, isn't it?
Well, the main reason, Ling, was that Stig, he knew how to market a band. He had his own record label, Polar Records, his studio, his production company. Yeah. He had it all. But when they recorded Waterloo, rather than record at his studio, they went to a different studio. So it was new to all of them. The sound was different. The producers were different.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was part of Stig's plan for them to win the Eurovision. Because the year before, they were in what they call the Melody Festival in Sweden, which is the equivalent to our song for Europe.
Yeah.
And they were in that and they came third with a song called Ring Ring in Swedish. So what Stig did, he got Neil Sedaka and Phil Cody, who wrote many, many hit songs, rewrite it with them. And then they changed the lyrics to English. And then it was re-released and put on their album. a year or so later. So he knew. But with the Waterloo, the Eurovision song, he decided to dress the conductor up as Napoleon. So when he walked out to conduct the orchestra, he was already, he'd already grabbed the audience. He grabbed their attention. So he it was a master plan. He had it all worked out.
And each song they release since they, you know, had won Eurovision song, and every single song is so memorable. On top of that, the lyrics are simple too. You know, like knowing me, knowing you, nothing complicated. They made it sound so beautiful, and they flow, and they come with the music, the extraordinary music. I believe, was it some of the music are written by the group themselves too?
Well, they write all of it. They write all the music. I mean, Stig really helps with the lyrics and the odd bit, but because Benny, of course, is classically trained. And if you take the, if you can imagine the hit records without the voices and the melody and listen to what's going on beneath it, the very, very classic type phrasing and instrumentation, that's what made the sound so different to anyone who was into music.
When you mentioned Neil Sedaka, he's classically trained. When you work in collaboration with people like that, the song could only be great. Because these are legends, aren't they?
They have the magic. And I think once you've written a hit song, you know the tricks and how it feels to write it. And most hit songs have got something in them, a chord or phrase that sets them about. They
it's
rise
the voices.
Above.
It's the voices. Is it Agnetha? How do you pronounce her name? The blonde
Agnetha,
one.
Yeah.
The one who sings the high notes, isn't it?
Yeah, but their voices blend so well together. And they'd recorded for years. All the members of ABBA had recorded for many years before they were ABBA. When they went into a studio, they had no real fear. Mm-hmm, they'd already worked out. They went in and what you got was real feeling that you don't get with a lot of groups who don't record much or haven't recorded much.
They're very dynamic, very powerful. The music is just outstanding. There's nothing like it, really.
No, definitely not. A little secret with ABBA, they often started with a title first. So once you've got a title, then they think, because they're Swedish, they think differently. So therefore, you get a different type of music.
Oh,
and when it's successful, it continues to be successful. It's magic.
Repeating itself. Why you? I
have you met all the four members of ABBA band?
Yeah, I'll tell you a very quick story. I had a band with CBS Records in 1977. And when I signed the band, there was a gentleman, the MD of CBS, was called Obie, Morris Oberstein. And we were in Cannes at the Music Fair in 1978, in January. And he came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder. He said, Graham, he said, they're coming in tonight. I said, oh, right, who? He said, ABBA. I said, oh, I've met Benny and Bjorn. He said, OK, you can have lunch with them tomorrow. So I had lunch at the Carlton Hotel with the band and Obie. And we just, six seats, and we just sat down outside in the garden of the Carlton Hotel. It's a very famous hotel. And Stig walked out into the garden and he tapped Obie on the shoulder. He said, we have business. We have business to talk. So I spent 2 hours having lunch and drinks with the members of the band. And what was interesting, Ling, was that Benny and Bjorn, although they're now very successful, said they missed playing in the folk parks where they could play. They were successful. But yeah. They could then go away and write songs and walk the streets without being mobbed. But now they said they had everything planned for them. Mm. So really, there was no freedom or time to do what they wanted. And the other thing was Agneta, she'd had her second baby then, the year before. She had two children, a little girl and a boy. And she actually said, while we were sat at the table, to Bjorn that she was worried about flying with him around the world in case they were both killed in a plane crash. So after that, she often flew on her own with a couple of obviously people, you know, her, her assistants around the world. So they would fly separately. Because she's got young children, you know, she had a first baby was 1973, the year before Eurovision, and the other one was 77. So she's got young children. She literally leaves at home. And for a mother, and then to commit to being 110% on stage, she couldn't forget them. So there was always this nagging feeling that I've left my kids at home. Should I be doing this? So that's something that very few people realise.
Was that the reason for their breakup? Was that was the pressure of family that broke them apart and ended up with divorces?
It's a combination. It's being together the whole time. It's having no freedom. I mean, success, it comes at a price. And for some people, the price is too great. Others, the price is what they want. They go out and they'll continue to be successful. And then at the end of that, then they will say, okay, now I can do what I want to do. But it was the children, the pressure of performing, interviews, being asked the same questions as they went around the world. You know, so it's very, very hard. And so the pressures, more records. No rest. You know, you get home and then you know you're off again in a day, leaving the kiddies again. So there is a price for any success. I mean, nowadays, a lot of the successful artists do take their children with them, but it's very different to what it was like in the 70s and early 80s. Now it's a big, big deal. You know, you've got hangers on, you've got your green room, individual green rooms for members of the band. You've got the kids around. It's a very different world. But then they literally were arriving in Holland and they'd be flying off to maybe, I don't know, Spain and then on to somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else. So you couldn't take kids around like that.
What happened to their recent reunion?
Well, the recent reunion really was purely a get together for Avatar to put together. Together ABBA Voyage, wasn't it? They are talking. There is talk, whether it happens, that they are going to unite and go around and do a Q&A and play their, not play their music or sing it themselves, but story behind certain songs. So it'd be a, and they're talking about doing that next year. But you know, a couple of them aren't well and they're getting older and it may not happen. But yeah, there is a get together, but to do the Avatar for the ABBA Voyage. They obviously all got together 3 or 4 years ago to record all that. And it's a fabulous thing to go to if anyone is in London.
There's no music, of course, being released, is there?
No, they did record two new songs for the ABBA Voyage, the Avatar presentation. They recorded two new songs. But again, you know, they're musicians, they're professionals. So, you know, to do that, they're not... They're all friends with each other, just the same. You know, they don't hate each other. It's just that it's very hard to
they
see.
They have children together.
Yeah, and
That's
Sophie
what's
Orme
linked.
with another lady and kids and Benny with someone else.
That's
That is the hardship. But they get over that because they're professionals and they love ABBA and they love the music.
Which one is your favourite song from this band, ABBA?
Well, I was at the Eurovision when they won in 74. So it's a toss-up for me between Waterloo and Dancing Queen. Dancing Queen is their biggest seller, and Fernando is their second. So I'm going to go with Dancing Queen.
So this particular song, The Dancing Queen, was it released at a time when disco were very, very sort of
Yeah,
popular?
yeah.
Yeah, it was
Yeah,
a time
well,
like the John Travolta time as well, Dancing Queen.
it was, yeah, a bit later than that, but yeah, it was. And they reckon that it's most played at weddings, at wedding receptions, because it's anywhere. As soon as that record comes on, people will get up and dance. Anywhere you go, on it comes, up, and everyone will get up and dance.
I believe that the male musicians in this band, two of them, continue to be writing music, not for themselves, but for the West End stage.
Oh yeah, Benny has his own studio now, and he's writing all the time. Bjorn is writing, but strangely, he can't remember the Eurovision. He's got a memory problem. It's not dementia, but
what
he
is
has
it?
a memory problem. So he's got so many gaps. I mean, you imagine traveling all over the world day after day. You're not going to remember it all anyway. But he's got a little bit of a memory problem, but he's still writing music. They'll continue to write, and I'm sure they get together every so often. It's a natural thing to do. They were together since 1970, you know, so that's a long time. And they still keep in touch and obviously meet up for publicity things.
I think it's so lovely to still be listening to their music. I mean, the younger generation who were not born at the time, you know, when the Eurovision song Waterloo was released, but I'm sure they have attracted so many young fans for re-releasing their music.
When you think, Ling, the original fans, if you like, back in the 70s, are grandparents now. So their children will have got into ABBA, and then the grandchildren, probably with Mamma Mia, the film and the musical, and then it will go on. So you've got at least three generations of people who love ABBA music.
You talk so enthusiastically about this band, and is it the band that you value, you know, more than any other bands?
Probably, yeah. I mean, as a band, I mean, because they were incredibly successful and they made so many wonderful records and quite different records. I mean, just to recap there, Annie Fried actually recorded Fernando when she was a solo performer before ABBA. And then they re-recorded it as ABBA.
When people listen to the ABBA music, it's the memory that they created through their beautiful musical videos. Yeah. And everything made it complete, perfect. Not just their song, but their video makes such a memorable time as well.
Very much so. And of course, some of the songs were written before ABBA by Benny and Bjorn. There were songs that they'd had in their portfolio, if you like. And when the band were together, then they rejigged them and out they went. And Fernando was one of those. But yeah, tremendous output, tremendous success. Probably one of the most successful bands, apart from the Beatles, you know, who created something new. A lot of bands who've done well, but ABBA created something new, as did the Beatles.
It's so nice to have you with us, telling us all these wonderful personal experiences that you have meeting the band, Graham. Oh, quickly, any novels?
Yeah, well, I'm working on Street Life, which is my new novel. I started it a few weeks ago. I'm hoping it's going to be finished by probably the autumn of next year.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ling. And my song to choose, really, for the end of the show is Dancing Queen.
Oh,
Live Wire Network is produced by Steve Osborne Media.